High 89.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
On to the president's executive order on immigration. The president has said both see you in court and also suggested there might be a new executive order. Which way is he going?
It's a great, great topic because there are so many things we can do. For one thing, we can take the case to the Supreme Court on the emergency stay. We can go back to the district court and we can have a hearing on the merits. We can go to the bank to have it heard on bank. Or if we want to, we can also continue the appeal with the panel. Additionally, we're considering new and further executive actions that will enhance the security posture of the United States. I don't have any news today to make on it, but I think the point, John, is that the president has enormous powers, both delegated to him by Congress and under the Constitution, his Article 2 Foreign Affairs powers, to control the entry of aliens into our country, and he's going to use that authority to keep us safe.
Okay, we'll wait for news on that. When I talk to Republicans on the Hill, they wonder, what is the White House? What have you all learned from this experience with the executive order?
Well, I think that it's been an important reminder to all Americans that we have a judiciary that has taken far too much power and become, in many cases, a supreme branch of government. One unelected judge in Seattle cannot remake laws for the entire country. I mean, this is just crazy, John. The idea that you're going to have a judge in Seattle say that a foreign national living in Libya has a effective right to enter the United States is beyond anything we've ever seen before. The end result of this, though, is that our opponents, the media, and the whole world will soon see, as we begin to take further actions, that the powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and will not be questioned.
There was Stephen Miller back months ago when the president redid the travel ban, saying that the president had the authority, and now that's been vindicated by the Supreme Court 5-4 decision. Joining us now to break some of this down and also the huge liberal victory last night, Joe Crowley, number 3 in the House of Representatives in the Democratic caucus. And many, like me, thought that he would potentially be a future speaker, that even if the Democrats took control of the House, if Joe Crowley challenged Pelosi, there would be a way for him. But now he's out. Joining us now to break this down, Liz Peek. You can read Liz Peek in the newspaper The Hill or their site. Go to thehill.com. You can also follow her on Twitter at Liz Peek. Liz, good to have you.
Good morning. Happy to join you on another momentous day, as you point out.
We can never actually talk about the topic that I wanted to talk about with you last week because it doesn't fit the cycle here. But I've got to get to the Supreme Court decision 5-4 yesterday. And they made a couple other ones that I want to get your opinion on as well. But a lot of people never really thought this was going to happen. Obviously, this and I think it was a great decision because I think, forget what you think about this, I think they ruled on the Constitution and not on policy. What say you?
Well, I totally agree. And remember that the travel ban was rewritten a couple of times to skirt some of the problems that arose from the courts initially, saying basically it was an anti-Muslim thing. When you throw North Korea and Venezuela into the mix, it's clearly not just aimed at Muslims. But it never was, because, after all, Indonesia, which I think is the world's largest Muslim, predominantly Muslim country,
right,
was never on the list. So it was
right,
kind of an ignorant thing to say that Trump was trying to ban all Muslims. Let's remember, what the president was trying to do was to prohibit or make it tougher for people to come into this country from countries that were known to harbor terrorists, where terrorist cells were not only alive and well, but acting out against Westerners and in particular against Americans. I mean, now that has sort of faded from the public's memory bank, but the truth is Americans were having their heads cut off by ISIS, and we had terrorist outbreaks here in the United States And it looked like that was increasing in frequency. Right now, we've been in a sort of lull where we haven't had any ISIS-inspired activity in the United States for a while, and thank heavens we haven't. But, you know, it's always easy to kind of forget the circumstances under which these rulings or ideas come from. And it seems to me at the time, I never thought the courts had any jurisdiction here, by the way. I mean, it's pretty clear that the president has the authority to determine who's coming into the United States on security grounds. The fact that he had in the past made comments that were anti-Muslim, in my view, were completely irrelevant.
And that's what the ruling said, and that's why the minority ruling by Justice Sotomayor, which that was the crux, that was the cornerstone of her dissent, based on what he had said during the campaign and other comments that the president made, I mean, I just thought that was irrelevant to the decision that the Supreme Court made. And I think what they did is they interpreted the Constitution, which basically is their job. It's not to make policy decisions from the bench, which the progressives always attempt to do. And that's why, you know, when you go back to the Obamacare decision, right, the Affordable Care Act, and, you know, everybody was very upset when John Roberts came down on the side of the president. But I defended him, even though I hated the law. Many of us did. But I defended him because what Roberts said is, look, I don't care if you like this or not. It's a tax. And a fine is a tax. And Congress has the right to set taxes. And so they basically said, if you don't buy insurance, you will be taxed.
Yeah.
And he said, according to the Constitution of the United States, Congress has that authority. And they passed it, and Obama signed it, and you can't deny this based on grounds of the Constitution. Because the other argument was, well, the Constitution says you can't compel somebody to buy something. And Roberts said, you don't have to buy it, you're just going to have to pay the tax. And so I thought Roberts was right, and I think this majority decision is the right thing to do. You know, at the end of the day, Liz, the Constitution, don't you think it served this nation pretty well?
Yes, of course. I mean, it has created a country that is the envy of the world, where millions of people want to come and live. So, yes, it has served us very well. And frankly, the more strictly we interpret it, you know, the better off the country is. We're not looking. And by the way, you have to give Senator Mitch McConnell some credit here. He has made the number one priority of this administration putting judges in place who believe that and who are not activists, but rather are interpreters of the Constitution. It's not just Neil Gorsuch, although he was a huge win for the country. It's also judges of the country at different levels. And that, you know, to his credit, that has been his priority. And I think, honestly, in terms of the lasting impact from this administration, that will be one of the biggest items.
You know, you go back to that when he blocked Merrick Garland and he got a lot of flack for that.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, I'm not a fan of Mitch McConnell. I'm not a fan of the 60-vote cloture rule and the filibuster rule. I'm not a fan of a lot of what he does. But, you know, that might have been worth it all, that one thing he did. You know, also then allowing the new justice, as you said, to get confirmed with 50 votes instead of the normal 60 that they've had in the past. So you're right. He does deserve credit for that. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. We are with Liz Peek. She is a columnist for the newspaper The Hill. You can read her at thehill.com. Also, you can go to her website, lizpeek.com, P-E-E-K, and you can follow her on Twitter, at Liz Peek. And when she writes the book, we will be promoting that as well. We're waiting for it to come out. We know it's coming, Liz. Let's get to the judge that put the ruling in yesterday, the federal judge in California who issued a nationwide injunction late Tuesday, temporarily stopping the Trump administration from separating children from their parents after they crossed the border illegally. How does a judge make that decision? Because if you cross the border illegally, you've committed a crime. And if you're apprehended for the crime, you're not supposed to take your children with you to jail. So what the heck is that about?
Well, again, I think this is a judge who has exceeded his authority. And my guess is it'll end up in the courts and eventually be overturned because this is not a judicial decision. Again, the president has the right to enforce our borders. We've just learned that So I don't expect this to stand. But the problem is, John, as you well know, this gums up the works, right? I mean, the government spends weeks, if not months now, in the court, spending a lot of taxpayer money on legal briefs and activities, which really are wasted effort because eventually, as I say, it's pretty clear this will be overturned. But it does create a stumbling block, and it does kind of put the administration on the defensive. And really, you know, unfortunately, there's not much you can do about it. I mean, by the way, the other big decision that we're all waiting to hear from the Supreme Court, one that I think will have enormous reverberations across the country, is the Janus decision. So we don't, every day, people are expecting this to come out. This has to do with the rights of public employees' unions to demand that public employees belong to the union and pay dues. This being the only portion of the working populace that is still heavily determined by or governed by labor unions, and it is a challenge to that dominance. And for blue states, you know, you just have to say this is probably the most important thing that could happen to Illinois, for example. In fact, the governor of Illinois is in Washington as we speak, awaiting this ruling, because it is there's a state that is in dire fiscal distress, mainly because of overly generous contracts given out to public employee unions. The same has happened in New York, Massachusetts, a whole bunch of other states. This is a big one, and it could happen today.
So just lay out what happens if it goes either way for our listeners.
Well, there's an employee who is saying he doesn't want to belong to the union, and he doesn't want to pay the union's dues. And what we've seen in some states, for example, Wisconsin, was when people didn't have to belong to the public employees unions, teachers unions in that case, a lot of people defected. And so the unions were starved of money. And that is really, of course, it always comes down to money with labor unions. But labor unions continue to be amongst the biggest contributors to political campaigns, obviously enormous backers of Democrats across the country. So this is basically hurts their pocketbook and their power, because money is power. And this insidious kind of intertwined relationship, labor unions, public employee labor unions, and Democrat officials, it is an offense to the taxpayers of America. And it's something that FDR, by the way, as you no doubt know, cautioned against. He opposed public employees being allowed to unionize, and he was totally right, because he saw the political corruption that would come as a result, and that's what we've seen.
Yeah, and I think for our listeners to understand, there's a big difference between unions organizing in private enterprise, right? So whether it's the auto workers union or the airline stewardesses union, whatever, these are unions that are organizing. I mean, my father was a union member, Liz, and a big believer in it. He worked for the New York Times as a pressman, and they went on strike in New York, as you know, Daily News, New York Times, a bunch of the old Tribune. And so, you know, they'd go out there and pick it, and he'd take me with him. But these were private companies. And I think the argument that FDR made is, if you're a public employee and you're getting paid by the taxpayers, and it's very difficult to get fired anyway, belonging to a public union invites this level of corruption that you've just mentioned. How do you see this going?
Well, I don't know. It seems to me that the rights of the individual have some standing, but I'm not a lawyer, and I really can't tell you the merits of this. But as we know, the right-to-work states, there are now, I think, 28 of them, the number has increased in recent years because of this kind of argument that no one should be compelled to belong to a union, and more importantly, no one should be compelled to have part of their wages go to support an organization that maybe they don't represent politically, because after all, an awful lot of that money gets spent on politics, on supporting candidates, even though it's not supposed to. You're supposed to pay a, quote, fair share to represent your benefits from organizing efforts and negotiating efforts. But the reality is money's fungible. So all of those dues get paid into a central pot. And if you don't like what the union's doing to your money, with your money, I think you have a pretty legitimate grievance.
We'll see what comes out. That ruling expected, I think, today or tomorrow, as I understand it. The Janus ruling might come out today. We'll see how it goes. We're with Liz Peek. We only got a couple more minutes. I know you have to take off. But you're in New York City, Liz. What an upset last night. This young lady, Alexandra, I want to say her name right, Ocasio-Cortez, a former organizer for Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign without any political elective experience, 28 years old. She raised $200,000. She took on Joe Crowley, a 19-year Democratic incumbent, her district, Queens, Bronx. Crowley, third in command in the House, chairman of the all-powerful Democratic House Caucus. Many, like me, thought he could upset Pelosi for Speaker if he chose to do that in 2018 if the Democrats take control. Gets beat, spends $3.4 million to $195,000, and gets crushed.
Yeah.
What is going on here?
What a waste of money, right? Look, I think too much should not be read into this, because basically this young woman activated a very powerful social media campaign, kind of like Barack Obama did, right, back in 2007 against Hillary Clinton, and then 2008. When he ran for president. And so that was pretty powerful. I think Joe Crowley has been around too long, got very complacent, refused to debate her, for example, which I think is always a mistake. It really makes you look weak and fearful and self-satisfied, which I think is kind of the way people read that. But more important here, let's not go crazy on this particular race, because this was a district that's very heavily Latino. It's a majority-minority district. And so I think it was ripe to have someone like this come in and act, you know, get and mobilize the Latin vote. And I think that's what she did. Let's not go crazy, because across the country, Bernie Sanders' acolytes are losing races. I mean, basically, almost every race that he's weighed in on, the candidate has lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is a widespread approval of socialism. Frankly, listening to this young woman, I don't even think she knows what socialism means. She thinks it's about the dignity of something or other. I mean, honestly, I don't know. But she's using a lot of buzzwords. She's young and attractive, and she got the Latin vote behind her. And I think that's kind of all you should really read from this.
You know what a big dilemma is here for the Democrats? And I heard this from a friend of mine I know in New York yesterday, who told me that the Crowley campaign thinks that there were a huge number of illegal voters, meaning people that voted that were not here in the country legally. They simply registered and checked the box that says, am I a citizen? Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. And that's a misdemeanor, or if, I don't know what it is. I think it's a misdemeanor. So they were saying privately that they thought she got thousands of illegal votes, not people that didn't show up on that rolls, people that they registered that are in the country illegally, who then showed up to vote for her. But what a dilemma that puts the Democrats in, right? Because the establishment is going to say, well, you got all these people that voted illegally to knock me out. But
I think it's hilarious.
It's hilarious,
right?
You
know what? I'm all for it. And these people, the Crowleys and this young woman and all these liberal Democrats, that's what they want. If they want people in the country illegally to be given the rights and due process of citizenship, then you know what? If they've signed up to vote, that's on them. And I got to tell you, if that's true, I had not heard that. If it's true, I think it's actually wonderful.
Well, you know,
that is chickens coming home to roost.
No question about it. And I don't know the validity of it, but I had heard some people saying that last night in the Crowley campaign, because they didn't know where these voters came from. Many of them are because she registered, apparently, a lot of new people. And so the question is, you know, are they really legal? Now, you know, in New York, you can get a
drug. Believe me, they're not making any distinction in New York whatsoever, as you probably know. You can go to school. You can, actually, there's like a welcome package you get.
That's right.
That gives you free tickets and discounts at restaurants and stuff. I mean, it's really outrageous.
That's right.
So, you know what, as I say, I hope that's true. I hope it really may. I mean, more seriously, I hope it is true. And I hope it offends the Democrat establishment to the point where they begin thinking maybe this is not such a great idea to just let anybody into the country and anybody vote. These are, I mean, honestly, the extremes to which the left has gone in promoting the idea that people here illegally should be given the same benefits as people who are legitimate citizens, it is outrageous. So if this has hurt their cause, I am beyond joyful.
If you work in the Trump administration and you're being harassed, well, that's according to Cory Booker running for president, Maxine Waters and Louis Gutierrez and many other Democrats, well, that's just fair fodder. Like, if you want to support this president and you want to go out to eat, you're going to be harassed. You're going to get tossed out. You're going to get thrown out. Your kids are going to be mocked and your life is in danger. I guess that's the next step. I don't really know. Good thing we have concealed carry. That's all I can say. It is unbelievable. It's not even a lack of civility. Can you imagine, just extrapolate this out. Let's go back to 2010 or 2013. Let's go back 5 years. And if this was happening to Obama administration officials, I mean, the legacy media would be, their heads would be exploding off. Yet this happens to people that support the president and work in the administration, and the legacy media is cheering them on. It's really an incredible scene in America that we have this today. And the Democrats are overplaying their hands. It's going to backfire again. Joining us now, Liz Peek. She is a noted columnist for The Hill. You can also follow her at LizPeek.com. Liz, great to have you with us.
Good morning. I'm happy to join you.
Liz, what do you make of this Kirstjen Nielsen, Stephen Miller, Sarah Huckabee employees of the White House, of the federal government? They can't go out to eat. They can't walk the street. They're being harassed. They can't go to bed at night. They have to stay in a hotel. People screaming at them, banging drums, throwing them out of places. What do you make of this, Liz?
Well, it is an unbelievably ugly scenario. And the last time I remember things like this was when the banking industry got into trouble and bankers were being harassed in their front yards, et cetera. I think that in this case, Trump derangement syndrome is sort of like a virus, and it has now spread to people working for Donald Trump. And it's really horrifying to me, because the bottom line is that these people on the left do not want our government to function. I mean, that has really been, you know, coming from the top. I mean, I don't think it's any more civil of Chuck Schumer to hold up nominations of people who want to work and have been tapped to work in the Trump White House than it is to stand and yell at Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I mean, the message is the same. This is a duly elected president, but we don't like him, and we're not going to let him be our president. So, to your point, it is inconceivable, truly inconceivable, that anyone on the right would have done this sort of thing when Obama was president. You would have been branded a racist, number one, immediately. But also, conservatives are just too darn polite. We just don't do this kind of thing. I mean, honestly, John, remember the week after the election of President Trump, people thronging the streets in New York and other cities protesting what? A duly elected president. I mean, it was ridiculous.
You know what? It's interesting that you say that, you kind of go back to that. And we had kind of forgotten about that. I mean, we had protests. The guy had done nothing. He just got inaugurated, right? And you had this massive protest, right? The pink hat protest for 2 days, right? Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
This massive protest for 2 days. And like, he hadn't done anything. So it's, again, you get back, like, so what were they protesting? The fact that their candidate didn't win?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
well,
what happens.
I mean, I think the problem is they have been egged on by, let's face it, our entertainment community, and by a lot of, you know, people who pretend to be comics or whatever, but are basically sort of liberal mouthpieces, and they have no standards whatsoever. They can use any language they like. And so if you have people like that who are visible and famous and they have big Instagram accounts, et cetera, and they're setting the bar lower and lower and lower, it is not so unexpected that average people are going to fall in line. But, you know, I mean, and look, I mean, let's face it, a lot of people think that Donald Trump started us down this path by attacking people during the primary, calling them names, et cetera, et cetera. But I have to say, I don't think he's ever, I mean, I don't know. Someone's probably going to take me up on this, but I don't think he has ever sort of descended to this sort of vilification, this personal vilification of people he considers personal political enemies and everybody around them. I mean, let's also face it, this attack on Trump's family is unprecedented, as far as I know.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. The National Security Agency is deleting more than 685 million call records the government's received from telecommunications companies since 2015. That's raising questions about the program's viability. Congress passed a law in 2015 saying all call data had to be retained by the telecom companies, not the NSA, but allowing the intelligence agency to request data. Rudy Giuliani strongly criticizing European democracies' will to maintain the Iranian nuclear deal after the U.S. decision to pull out from the accord. President Trump's lawyer making his remarks while attending the annual meeting of an Iranian exile group near Paris. And German Chancellor Angela Merkel reportedly securing agreements with 14 European Union countries to rapidly return some asylum seekers as she seeks a way to end the schism in her government over migration policy.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a health care plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Make excellent happen. Only at New Balance can you get athletic footwear, apparel, and accessories with highly trained New Balance fit specialists to make sure everything is exactly right. If you're having a hard time finding comfortable shoes or have a hard-to-fit size, your answer is at the New Balance store. New Balance in Orange Park and Beach Boulevard features full-service sit-and-fit locations. Both New Balance stores have a full stock of running, walking, baseball, cross-training, and tennis shoes. You'll find sizes 5 to 18, widths AA, B, D, Double E, 4E, 6E, plus orthotic arch supports. New Balance's state-of-the-art computerized foot scanner gets the right fit every time. Make excellent happen at either New Balance store. 10,095 Beach Boulevard, open Monday through Saturday, 10 till 6. Call 620-0483 or at 1871 Wells Road across from the Orange Park Mall. Open Monday through Saturday, 10 till 8. Call 592-7892. New Balance, athletic footwear and apparel for all ages.
Tune in to AM 600 every Saturday morning for the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, sponsored by Frontline Insurance. Find out where those fish are, what they're biting, and how to get them in the boat. Get the latest fishing info on tides, weather, and new products, and much more from the Sultan of the St. John's, Captain Vic Tyson. Start your weekend right. Tune in to the Captain Vic Tyson Still Just Fishing Show, Saturday mornings from 6 till 8, right here on AM 600 WBOB. Listen online or get the podcast at WBOB.com.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
On the south side, there's an accident, I-95 southbound, the ramp at Emerson. Also an accident, 95 southbound, that's the ramp to the West Beltway near the airport. Disabled vehicle on 295, this is the West Beltway southbound at Buckman, that's blocking the center lane there. All right, we got more scattered showers and thunderstorms for a while through this evening. Low 73, high tomorrow 89, right now it's 81 in Jacksonville. Talk radio WBOB.
What I find so disturbing is not the treatment the children are receiving here, but the fact that the administration that created this horrific policy that basically the American people hit the American public's kind of moral gag reflex and forced this president to retreat from that policy, that because of his haphazard approach, there's not been the appropriate planning put in place with ORR, which has now responsibility for the children, to make sure that there's an expedited process to get these kids reunited with their relatives. This problem was created because this president arbitrarily used power to put in place a zero-tolerance policy that the American people revolted against. And this president showed that he could change that policy with simply the use of his own pen.
Okay, so he did that. So here's what Senator Warner's saying. All right. First of all, he never addressed the problems in this Virginia facility, which elected officials in Virginia should be accountable to. So let's go and address those and get that fixed, right? Because that's got nothing to do with Trump. And there's just not the kids of illegals in there. There's all kinds of kids in there, right? So you got a problem in your facility, you guys go fix it in Shenandoah Valley. But so what the senator said, let's break this down. Okay, what he said is, number one, the zero tolerance policy replacing catch and release, which was meant as a deterrent, the senator said that the Trump administration was caught by surprise at how many of these there would be, and they didn't really plan for how, where the kids would go and how they would get reunited with their parents after the paperwork was done. That's not a false statement. That's a true statement, right? The planning in this is not going to go down. It's not going to be taught at Harvard MBA school. I mean, it was very poor planning. So we can agree on that. So the senator is right with that. He said that the American people revolted. Well, they revolted because nobody likes to see kids crying on TV, just like they revolted when they were watching the Vietnam War and they started to see that unfolding, right? We didn't watch live World War I or World War II or the Korean War. There would have been the same thing, right? So I get that. He's right on that. And he also said, you know, the president has the authority to change it, which he did with a pen, which he did. So the senator was right there. So the first three things the senator said were right. Right? And also, and I'm going to defend Warner here, right? You heard no hysteria in that clip. I mean, his words were measured. He's a Democrat. He doesn't believe the same things we do. That's okay. It's a free country. But there was no hysteria in Warner's clip. It was like, matter of fact, President put in a policy, they didn't plan for it, it was a disaster, he had the power to change it, he changed it, and then what Warner said is, now what you have to do is you have to figure out how to reunite these children with their parents, expedite it as quickly as you can when you get the paperwork done and go from there. Which means, you know, go back to your country or go back to wherever, you just can't stay here. If your asylum is not approved, you got to go through the process, and you do that by getting out of the U.S. and going through the policies that are now in place. And those that come into the country now are not going to get separated, and we got to get that done. Otherwise, we got to go back to catch and release, right? So Warner didn't criticize the policy. If you notice, he didn't criticize the deterrent policy of zero tolerance. He appropriately criticized the lack of planning for the reality of the implementation of it, which the government was not prepared to do. That's why kids are being flown 1,000 miles away into facilities they were trying to find beds. That was not good, right? And so, and they didn't prepare the American people for this. I mean, what the president should have done, hindsight is 2020, we can all be an armchair quarterback, is he should have spent about a month preparing everybody for what was going to happen and saying over and over, this is going to be a deterrent. It was too quick. They didn't do that. Everybody was caught by surprise. So I'm defending Warner today because he's right. Everything he said in that clip is right. And let's go back to the glass of wine statement at his home in Martha Vineyard. He was at his home with his friends making a joke. I mean, you got to have some sense of humor here. He has no inside information from Mueller. There's no conspiracy. He was kidding around. Give the guy a break. There's no humor in this town. So I'm going to defend Warner because in this instance and with this clip and with that statement, Mark Warner is on target. And he was kidding in Martha's Vineyard at his house. If you can't make a joke in your own house, what the hell are we coming to in this country? Now, immigration and the separation of children dominating the Sunday shows and dominating the news, virtually drowning out any good news that the president has. He went to a rally in Las Vegas on Saturday, had a huge crowd there, but it really doesn't matter because all anybody wants to talk about is kids in cages, and this administration cannot get a handle on this narrative, and it's really starting to cost them dearly. Now, when you get away from the emotion, I mean, I was on Chris Cuomo Friday night and won the argument because when you get away from the emotion of this issue and you get to the facts, they really bear out. And what the president and his advisors have not done is explain this well and also been able to tell the American people exactly what is going on. Number one, this was put in place to act as a deterrent, period. And any shying away from that really devalues the argument here or the policy. It was put in place to be a deterrent because what has been happening in the United States is that anybody right now, it is so easy to come over the border. There's virtually so little ability to stop people from crossing over illegally. And this has been reported now widely. And if you have children, it becomes much more difficult for ICE or those at the border to do anything. So let me just lay this out for you. So 12 months ago, we were getting control of it. And then when amnesty started to come up in Congress, people from Central America started to say, hey, if I just go to America and I have kids, I'm going to have an anchor and I'm going to be fine and I'm going to be able to let in legally and I don't have to go through any of the processes or the system or pay any of the money. In fact, I'll get money in order to live. I mean, that's the mantra down there. So 12 months from last June, April, May, and June, apprehensions at the border were up 300%. 300%. That means three times as many people were coming in. Now, understand that 75% of people who cross the border illegally with kids or not are never apprehended. So these are the statistics that nobody will talk about. So three out of four people that cross the border don't get apprehended. Kids or not, they simply elude the authorities. And if you want asylum because you're fleeing whatever it is that you're fleeing, whether it be crime or fear for your life or a better chance at a better world or whatever it is that you're doing, there are 325 ports of entry along the southern border, 325. And so if you go to one of the ports of entry, by the way, three of them in San Diego, three. So if you get to San Diego, the border of San Diego, there are three ports of entry. It is inconceivable to me you can't find these after you've traveled, I don't know, 1,000 miles over three countries. And by the way, what do the Mexicans do when they come into their country going to the United States? They just, what, open the door and put out a pathway? So there are 325 ports of entry along the southern border. All you have to do when you want asylum is you have to go to the port of entry and say you want asylum. And you will be processed, and your families will not be split up, and you will be put in housing right there until they figure it out with your minor children. No problem. And if your application is denied, well, you can't come in. I mean, that's the law. Otherwise, you don't have any borders. You have no borders, which is obviously what the Democrats and the donor-based Goldman Sachs Republicans want. No borders. Catch and release is not a program. It is simply looking the other way and part of the unholy alliance between Democrats who want cheap votes and Republicans who want cheap labor driven by Wall Street, period. That's why they've been looking the other way for 40 years now. Nobody will solve this. Nobody wants to solve it deep down because they want the flow of illegals coming into the United States. Secretly, they want it until the president finally exposed the entire scam between the two parties, what we call the Huni Party, one party, one driven by money, Republicans, the other driven by power, Democrats. That's what's going on here, regardless of what the Democrats say. The alternative to this is, and I keep asking it, the alternative is no borders. You simply don't have a country. And if you're for that, then at least have the moxie and the courage and the honesty to say it. I'm for no borders, open borders and no borders. Anybody can come in at any time. And when you enroll your child in school, like I did in Southeast Virginia years ago in the third grade, and 50% of the kids in his class did not speak English, and I had to put him in a Catholic school, I guess, who cares, right? This is the reality of the situation. And so stop lying and tell the truth. You want no borders. You want to transform the country. You want all of the illegals to come in, get a pathway, get a registration form, and vote Democratic, and have power in perpetuity. At least you're being honest. At least say it. And the Republicans, well, they'll look the other way because Goldman Sachs and Wall Street are funding them, and they want open borders to drive down wages and have cheap labor. That's been the unholy alliance that has been going on in this country for years. And President Trump was the first person to expose it for the scam it is. So you have 325 points of entry. 325. It is inconceivable to me you can't go to one of those if you truly want asylum. And then you're not split up with your kids. And nothing happens and you get processed. However, if your process and application and interview is rejected, you get turned away. That's the risk. So rather than take that risk, they cross over the border with their minor children illegally, try to elude authorities, right? This idea that they're crossing over the border legally and then seeking out border patrol is a complete lie. That is not happening. They're apprehended. And then they throw up their arms and they claim asylum. Meantime, the people that have claimed asylum the right way are being processed and standing in line. And then the Democrats are saying, well, the lines, get this, the lines for application for asylum are too long. It might take a day or two. Excuse me? You just spent 100 days crossing three countries over terrible terrain to get to the United States. It's taken you over a month, and you're going to tell me waiting an extra day or two to do this legally is an inconvenience? And so you just break the law, then it's somehow it's our fault. Now, nobody's for separating families, and the president has an executive order to stop that, and the optics are horrible, and everybody knows that. But there's also a rule of law, and there's also the alternative, which is no borders. Simple. And as far as the reunification, 2,300 families have been separated. 600 of them have already been reunified. And it's the administration's objective to reunify these families as quickly as they can and send them back over the border because they're here illegally and get them repatriated with their country. And then if they want to come back, they have to go through the process like everyone else. And if they want to claim asylum, there's a legal process to do that. And there's 325 opportunities lined up across the southern border. That's all they have to do. I don't think the president is asking too much. Because catch and release, not only is it not a deterrent, it's a magnet. Why not come to the United States? Why wait in line? Why go through the process? Why do anything? Why do any of the applications? Why do anything legally? Why spend money when I can cheat, come over the border illegally, 75% chance I'm not going to get apprehended. Then I'll have a baby. Then I'm good to go. These people are not dumb, right? They've crossed countries to get here. And so if by chance I do get apprehended, then I can throw up my hands and claim asylum. In 2013, 1 out of 100 people that were apprehended claimed asylum. In 2018, 1 in 8. By 2020, it'll be 80%. Just claim asylum and you're good to go. Doesn't matter why you're here, what you're doing, or what law you broke. But there's a process to claim asylum, and it's not being followed. Meantime, what the Democrats and some Republicans are suggesting is that we have basically a double standard of justice in the United States. One standard for illegals who come to the country illegally, and they can claim asylum or claim whatever they want, and they get housing, and they don't get separated from their children, and they get fed, and they're fine. The other for people in America that are poor, that are accused of committing a crime. They're arrested, and their minor children are taken away from them and put into child protective services, just like what's happening with those that crossed the country illegally and broke a law. So if you steal a loaf of bread to feed your family at the grocery store and you're apprehended on the way out and you are handcuffed and you have 3 children in tow, they are separated from you and you go to jail. Right now that is happening all over America. And then you go to jail and you're poor and the judge sets in 3 days a $3,000 bond. And you can't raise the $325 for bail because you don't have it and nobody will help you out. You will sit in jail and rot for 45, 60, or 90 days, depending on the flow, until you have a hearing. And meantime, you have lost all contact with your kids. They're gone. Until you can get out and then file all the paperwork to try to find them, see them, and get them back. Now, that's happening right now in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Chicago, and Washington, D.C., but it can happen in Laredo, Texas. So basically, you have a double standard of rights. Those for illegals and those people in the U.S. that are poor and can't make a cash bond, which is a whole separate issue. I mean, these are the facts. And when you argue the facts, you win the argument. When you argue on Obama did it and emotion and, oh, the same thing happened under the Obama administration and it's Obama's fault and it's the law and we have to follow, then you get killed. Because then it becomes emotion. If Obama did it, what's that got to do with it? That has nothing to do with this argument. And certainly, separating children is not a good idea. That's why... The president signed the executive order to stop the practice and has issued a directive to reunify these families as quick as he can, but it was set as a deterrent. And so now if you're coming into the United States and you have children, you got to think about this. Otherwise, you're for no borders. And just say it. I'm for no borders. I'm Maxine Waters or I'm any Democrat, Dick Durbin, you name it, Kamala Harris, and I'm for no borders. I want no borders, no wall, no security, and no laws. And be honest about it. And say the reason not for that is because I know that every person that comes in, 9 out of 10 of them are eventually going to get registered to vote, and they're going to vote for me. So that's what I want. Just stop lying about it. And then we can have an honest debate that you want no borders. Because that's the alternative. The Democrats don't have a single solution to this other than no borders. Well, why don't we go back to catch and release? Well, catch and release is not a program. Catch and release is a joke. Catch and release is no borders. You come over the border illegally, you get apprehended, Catch and release means you're caught. You get a piece of paper that says you have to appear in the magistrate of Laredo or San Diego in 6 months. Where are you going? I'm going to St. Louis. Okay. Go over there. We'll get you a plane ticket and send you there. But remember, in 6 months, you have to come back. Less than 50% of her show up again. So they're gone. And the other three quarters were not apprehended. So catch and release is not a deterrent. In the meantime, in the last study done by the General Accounting Office in 2011, 25,000 murders committed by people who are here illegally up to 2011. We don't have stats after that that are verifiable. Everybody's got their own. 45,000 robberies, 70,000 sexual assaults. People coming here illegal, it's a real issue. But we can debate that. But let's get an honest debate. You either want no borders or you want security. Because what the Democrats and some Republicans are saying is we don't want a wall. We don't want security. We don't want the National Guard at the border. We don't want the military at the border. We don't want a policy in place to return people. We want catch and release. We want to look the other way. And we really don't want any security whatsoever because we resist everything. We don't want immigration reform. We don't want to get rid of chain migration. We don't want to get rid of the visa lottery system. We want to change nothing. In fact, we want to encourage more illegals to come into the United States, and they'll get around the law by claiming asylum and they'll all come in because our kids go to private school and they're not overrun because we have more money. So this feels good to us. And eventually we're going to get all the power and we'll be the elite and we'll just rule over the hapless proletariats. At least if the Democrats said that on Face the Nation or Stephanopoulos, whatever shows, at least they'd be honest about it. I mean, I'm just asking for an honest debate. And when the president had his angel families come in on Friday trying to highlight the number of children that have been permanently separated from their parents because they were murdered, the mainstream media and the press mocked it. They mocked it as a sideshow. Really? You tell that to the parents who can only visit their children now at a gravesite. And the legacy media made fun of it and belittled it as a PR event. This is a very serious debate in this country, and you really have to come down on the side of whether you want a border or you don't. And if you don't want it, at least now you can start an honest discussion instead of lying about kids in cages. Because the Democrats have no alternative whatsoever other than open the borders up and have none. Get them in. Register them to vote. Don't check the box. Get them to the polls so we can have power. And the Republicans stand behind it, some of them because they're getting the money from Goldman Sachs. John Fredericks, Radio Network. You know in your heart, I'm telling you the truth.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online.